gospel lesson this morning is taken from the second chapter of Luke. In those days, a decree went out from Emperor Augustus that all the world should be registered. This was the first registration and was taken while Quirinius was governor of Syria. All went to their own towns to be registered. Joseph also went from the town of Nazareth in Galilee to Judea, to the city of David called Bethlehem, because he was descended from the house and family of David. In those days, a decree went out from Emperor Augustus. With these few words, we are introduced to one of the most powerful persons of the ancient world. His name was Octavian. But he added the name Caesar to his own name because he wanted to be associated with his great uncle, Julius Caesar, who laid the groundwork for the change from Rome as a republic to Rome as an empire. The Roman Senate conferred upon Octavian the honorific Augustus, which means something like revered one or majestic one. And so down through history, he has been known as Caesar Augustus. He ruled the empire from 27 BC to AD 14. And he initiated a 200-year period of peace known as the Pax Romana. It is said of Augustus, he came to a Rome made of brick and left it a city of marble. Indeed, he transformed the entire Mediterranean world with his roads and his armies, with his architecture and his political policies. To the citizens of Rome, technically he was not actually an emperor. But to those in the outlying provinces, he was more than an emperor. He was considered a god. And so throughout the provinces, they began building imperial temples to worship this god. This would later prove to be an agonizing problem for Christians. During the reign of Augustus, he reorganized his administration, reorganized several parts of the empire, carried out fresh censuses for the purpose of taxation and military conscription. In our scripture text, we read of one such census that leads Joseph and his betrothed Mary to the city of David, known as Bethlehem. A journey to the ancestral home would have fit Jewish practice. And so that custom was done in a, what you might call a culturally sensitive or culturally thoughtful way, so as not to cause undue offense. Nazareth to Bethlehem was about a 90-mile trip. That's assuming they did not go directly through Samaria, because in those days there was intense prejudicial hatred between those two groups. So it would have taken several days to get there. But why on earth did Jesus take, why did Joseph take his pregnant wife-to-be on such an arduous journey? Did you ever wonder that? Wouldn't it have been safer for her to have stayed back in Nazareth while Joseph went to fulfill his responsibilities in Bethlehem? Well, Luke gives us a hint as to the answer to that. He tells us that the person responsible for this part of the census was the Syrian governor, Quirinius. The province of Syria at this time would have included Judea, would have included cities like Jerusalem and Bethlehem. While the census was going on throughout the empire, it was done province by province, and so it may not have taken place at the exact same time, and they followed local custom. The Syrian province was one of the few provinces in the empire that taxed both men and women. So if Mary had any connection to Bethlehem, and the evidence supports the idea that she did, then she also was required to go to Bethlehem regardless of her condition. Now, the appearance that this story presents is quite striking. Augustus must have been an exceedingly powerful ruler. That one decree should have such an amazing chain reaction of events. Bruce Larson puts it this way: the man believed to be a god intercepted in time and space the god who became a man. And this mightiest man of his time decreed that a census was to be taken, which forced Joseph and Mary to travel to Bethlehem. But is Augustus in fact the power behind what happens? If we dig deeper, we learn the truth. What the pagan emperor did not know was that his taxation decree was overshadowed by a decree of a much greater lord. Hundreds of years before Augustus took control of the Roman Empire, God had decreed that a ruler would be born in David's town, this little, unremarkable village of Bethlehem. So we might ask then, who then determines history? The Caesars? Kings? Presidents? No, none of these. We believe that God is not only the ruler of all things, but also the ruler of human history. All serve God, though most do so unwittingly. The problem with the way we celebrate Christmas in church is that we treat it as though it were just a nice story we love to retell once a year. In those days, we declare, Jesus was born in Bethlehem. And by in those days, what do we mean? We mean 2,000 years ago. I mean, that's really a long time ago. We're talking about something that's part of ancient history. But if we treat the Christmas story this way, if we treat the story of Jesus this way, then what we're doing is communicating to the world that this story of Jesus is boring and has nothing to do with our modern lives. I mean, think about it. Raise your hand if you're willing. How many had history as your favorite subject in school? Raise it. Raise your hand. Okay, about 4%. I won't say anything about you. Most people find ancient history boring. They don't see what it has to do with what goes on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, throughout the week. And we do a disservice when we treat the Christmas story this way. In those days long ago, something wonderful happened. Fantastic. Great. But what does it have to do with now? We spend all this time and energy commemorating the birth of Jesus. And then when Christmas finally arrives, we sort of let the story stop right there. It may be possible so to emphasize Christmas that we never get beyond the holiday to what God had in mind in the long run when he sent his son in human form to be born among us, God with us. Sometimes it seems we never allow the baby Jesus to grow up. This year we will celebrate the birth of Jesus. And next year, guess what? We'll celebrate the birth of Jesus again. Nancy Dugan was nearly 4 years old, and her older siblings and parents tried their best to prepare her for her Christmas celebration and explain to her why the family observed Christmas the way they did. It turned out to be a wonderful Christmas. Nancy got lots of presents, lots of toys. Then later, she was sitting down next to her older sister, and Nancy looked up at her and said, "I do hope Mary and Joseph have another baby." It is not hard to understand why Christmas can be misunderstood, especially for people who are new at it. When they see all the lights, they see presents and gifts under the tree, they see all the decorations everywhere. And these are concrete things. These are things you can hold on to. So different from the abstract ideals of peace on earth, goodwill towards others. My granddaughter, Naomi, upon seeing her first ever Christmas tree erected in her home, went over to the tree and shook one of its branches as though it were a hand and said, "Nice to meet you, Christmas." But perhaps Christmas is more concrete than we think. Once God had gone to all the trouble of sending his son in human form as an infant, have you ever considered how the story continued after that? How it still continues after that? In those days, a decree went out. And it turned out that the decree that really mattered was not Caesar's, but God's. Now, here's good news. We can say, in these days, God's decrees are still going out. And God's decrees are the ones that really matter. It also means the story is not over. The plan continues, and you and I are part of the plan. Let's not be like the characters described by the psalmist who said, "But they soon forgot what God had done and did not wait for his plan to unfold." Psalms 116, verse 13. There are many who want to believe that life should be easy. But the obvious truth is, life is hard. Most of us have more medical tests in our future than in our past, more tears to come than we've already shed. The carefree days never last long enough. Some of us worry about being alone. Will we spend our lives by ourselves? Others worry about family. Will our marriage get better? We're afraid for our children and our grandchildren. What kind of world are they going to live in? We're afraid that our parents are growing old. How are we going to care for them? We worry about our health. Now, some of us are growing older, too. Last Tuesday, I celebrated my 39th birthday. For the 26th time. Time marches on. Life can be hard. The world is dark. The state of the world leads to pessimism. The world is at war, and no one seems to have an exit strategy. So many bad things happen that we become numb to the sufferings of others. We will spend most of our lives hoping for a better day and a better world. But we need to remember, in these days, God's decrees are still going out. God is still at work. God will accomplish his purpose for us. Because of Christ, the world will be better than it is now. Peace will overcome hostility. Love will defeat hatred. Fear will become laughter. One day, everything the biblical prophets hoped for will be. One day, we will learn war no more. One day, those committed to the way of Christ and the promise of peace will be proven right. Stephen Curtis Chapman wrote a song called Glorious Unfolding. And by the way, there's also an official music video of this song. It came out around 2013 or so. Glorious Unfolding. I recommend, if you get a chance, to see the official music video of this song by Stephen Curtis Chapman. It's on YouTube and other places. But if you see the music video, beware. You will need a box of Kleenex. A portion of the song goes like this. Lay your head down tonight, take a rest from the fight. Don't try to figure it out, just listen to what I'm whispering to your heart. Because I know this is not anything like you thought the story of your life was gonna be. And it feels like the end has started closing in on you, but it's just not true. There's so much of the story that's still yet to unfold. God's plan from the start for this world and your heart has been to show His glory and His grace, forever revealing the depth and the beauty of His unfailing love. And the story has only begun.